Yep, he's planning another project. So this Father's Day at Lowe's, tap into free gifts for dad. Get a free select Craftsman power tool when you buy a Craftsman V20 charger with 2 amp hour and 4 amp hour batteries. Plus, get a free DeWalt power tool when you buy a select 20 volt max XR 4 amp hour battery kit. Dad knows our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 7/14 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Good news. At Aqaba Summit, Israel and the Palestinian Authority agree to weigh restarting security coordination and to meet again in Egypt. Malcolm Holine, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, returns from Israel to help me with these apparent good news. Malcolm, a very good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. It's great to be back with you and to start engaging again in all of these issues.
Is this okay to call good news, Malcolm, this headline?
I think it the event itself that it took place, the summit, was positive, as we learned, but some of the motivation was not, and the reason why people felt the moment was so serious, as I'm sure Laser will explain to us.
We welcome our colleague Laser Berman, the diplomatic correspondent, Times of Israel. Laser, a very good evening to you. Do I overread this headline, or are there positives here that I couldn't have expected given the level of violence these last weeks? Good evening to you.
Good evening. I think there is a dark lining to the silver cloud that immediately was apparent after the summit. And one of those dark linings is that within Netanyahu's coalition, it's very clear that Netanyahu is perceived as not really having control over his right flank. And as the communique was coming out of the Aqaba summit, we saw that Bezalel Smotrich, Itamar Ben-Gvir were releasing tweets and speaking out against the summit, saying they weren't consulted. And they basically said, you know, whatever happened, if it happened, it has nothing to do with us. So that means that, you know, there is fighting within the coalition. And I think we saw some of that as the summit was happening. You had the killing of the two brothers from Har Bracha, and then the riot, whatever you want to call it, by settlers in Hawara. So that certainly was not a very promising sign to come out on Sunday night. And then, of course, on Monday night, you had the American Ilan Ganelis, who was killed in the Jordan Valley shooting. So I think there is definitely concern. If we are looking for a silver lining here, it would be that the PA is willing to resume security cooperation, and it's just a question of how determined they are and how capable they are. And let me remind the listeners that Ramadan is around the corner. It will be starting in about 3 weeks, and that in recent years has been a time when violence has spiked even further.
Malcolm, you have a question for Laser. Go ahead.
And Ramadan intersects with Passover this year, which is usually a volatile combination. And it seems, though, that both sides are trying to de-escalate in advance of that. Is that, in fact, the case on the ground, and are people responsive to that?
It is certainly the case that both sides do want to de-escalate, and not only both sides, but you also have Jordan, Egypt, and the U.S. Jordan is especially sensitive to what happens in the West Bank and Jerusalem, and that has been the flashpoint in the past couple of years. We remember in 2021, that even sparked an operation in the Gaza Strip. I think Hamas will be keeping an eye on things and will be looking for opportunities to present themselves as the defenders of Jerusalem. So if they can do that, they might try to seize an advantage there as well. But it is, I would call it the responsible parties who understand what is at stake here, and that there are certainly players who are looking who see an opportunity here to advance agendas which certainly make it more difficult to keep the calm and to keep violence at an acceptable level. But people are worried. And again, the PA is going to be a key player here. They have failed to keep violence down in the northern West Bank. That's why the IDF has had to do these raids in the Jenin refugee camp and in Nablus. And if they are really going to be meaningful players here and want to keep the IDF from having to do these operations, then they really have to make sure that they're able to prevent terrorism from reaching Israelis.
Laser, my understanding is the PA is not the only adversary here. It's who's paying for this violence, this witch's brew of organizations, breakaways from all parts of the West Bank and even Gaza, paid for by Iran. So should this conversation extend to Tehran as well? Can the PA speak for Tehran?
No, I don't think within the West Bank, as much as Iran would like to, you know, set up another proxy, armed proxy organization under tentacle of the beast that close to Israeli centers, I don't think that Iran can dictate what goes on the ground. I'm not even sure that Hamas can, especially. A lot of these attacks are either from criminal gangs, what we call lone wolf attacks. I'm sure Iran is happy to see it, but the dynamics here are different. They can't even dictate what goes on in the Gaza Strip. Their relationship with Hamas is on again, off again. So I don't think in this case it is Iran that is setting the agenda here at all. Their main expression of their threat against Israel comes on the northern border, as we know, in Lebanon, and they're attempting to in Syria.
Malcolm?
Do you see Israel having made concessions at the Aqaba talks? There were various reports of settlement fees, other things that they made as additional concessions to the Palestinians in order to induce them to resume the security cooperation. Do you know whether that, in fact, was the case?
Well, there was it's a funny question, and I'm smiling because there was such a clear semantic game going on by Israeli ministers and Israeli spokesmen. They insisted that there was no settlement freeze, and they were correct that the projects that had been approved would be approved, but they also had committed to not announcing new projects. Now, Netanyahu and his circle say that, well, that's just because of the pace of the approval process. There weren't going to be any new projects approved in the coming months anyway. But, you know, you can kind of get a sense that they're just spokesmaning this, and that they did agree. They had to give something, and it seems like what they gave was that they would not be announcing new settlement construction, and that they would not be authorizing any more outposts, at least for the coming months. I think everyone is just trying to get through Ramadan, and then we can reassess, and everyone will take stock and see what the policies will be going forward into the summer.
What does the PA want out of these summit meetings, out of the de-escalation? What would they regard as a success?
That's a wonderful question, because the PA certainly has not been an especially constructive actor. I think if you want to give them the most charitable reading of what they want, it would be that they would want to continue to allow Palestinian businesses to grow in Jenin. There is a significant business population who's not happy about these IDF raids. But then you see that how ineffective they've been against Palestinian terrorism, and there's certainly a place to doubt what their determination really is. They have also been pursuing a campaign against Israel and international organizations, and that is certainly a goal of theirs. And they are trying to internationalize this conflict in international bodies. Israel is trying to convince them not to, and I think this is certainly one of the things that the PA has to give up if there's going to be any sort of long-term arrangement between the two sides.
We have about a minute, Malcolm.
So just very quickly, do you see, you used a reference to lone wolves. Do you really see that these operatives, the attacks that have been taking place on a rather consistent basis, many of which don't result in deaths and don't get reported, as opposed to having influences, incitement, and in a more organized nature?
I think there is certainly incitement, right? So the PA and other bodies are certainly giving general praise, and you certainly on social media, there is incitement and an atmosphere that encourages these attacks. But what we've seen in recent years, especially in some recent spikes in Jerusalem, has been people who have a kind of a mix of motivations. They have personal problems, family problems. They get fired, something like that. They have a run-in with a family member, maybe with the police, and then with the incitement that they see online, and they know that they can be portrayed as a hero. Then the combination is what drives them to pick up a gun or a knife. So I don't think it's directly, mostly it's not directly organized. It's not centrally directed, but it is a mix of these things, and certainly Palestinian incitement cannot be ignored here, and is a problem that the international community, Jordan, Egypt, do have to deal with, and do have to pressure the Palestinian Authority to stop doing.
Laser Berman, Times of Israel, Malcolm Honlein. I'm John Ray.
What happened to her, Mario? How could she simply disappear after she was with you?
I don't have answers for that.
48 Hours at CBS News present.
I'm just going to ask you straight out. Did you kill Christy Wilson?
No, I had nothing to do with her disappearance.
Another season of My Life of Crime with Erin Moriarty. Award-winning correspondent Erin Moriarty brings you face-to-face with killers.
I will never say that I'm a cold-blooded killer. I will never say I'm a murderer.
And the people they took from.
My son died running for his life.
This season, follow the evidence with Erin, beyond the speculation, including in the death of boxing legend Arturo Gatti.
My gut says I don't think he would take his life.
I know my husband killed himself.
Listen to My Life of Crime from 48 Hours on Amazon Music or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm David Pogue from CBS Sunday Morning. In the new season of my podcast, Unsung Science, you'll meet the discoverers of Ernest Shackleton's shipwreck, Endurance, lost beneath the Antarctic for 100 years.
It looked like the day when it sank. It's just a very good environment down there to conserve a shipwreck.
The woman who invented forensic genealogy and has solved over 150 cold cases.
It's controversial, right? Because you never know if sitting around your Thanksgiving table, there's somebody who's been getting away with murder or rape.
And the NASA engineers who flew a helicopter on Mars.
The density is 1% that of Earth's. 1% air density. It sounds impossible, and it is almost impossible.
It's season 2 of Unsung Science, presented by CBS Sunday Morning and Simon & Schuster. Listen to Unsung Science on Amazon Music or wherever you get your podcasts.